You can have all the Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio podcast with our new app. Just search your app store, Apple, Android, Kindle. We don't care what you use. Search the app store for Explorations Early Learning. Download the app. Give it a try.
It's time to lean back and buckle in. This ain't your grandma's early learning podcast. Then again, your grandma probably didn't know what a podcast was. Hey, moms and dads, puppies and kittens, caregivers and advocates, it's time for Shaking Bones. Here's Dan and Amy.
And have you observed that, too, in your program, that children who are allowed to take risk actually become more successful at managing risk?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that when kids are allowed to control their own bodies, they're actually very cautious. They're very careful with themselves. They're thoughtful about how they move, you know, how they climb the tree, how they climb. When you referenced that really tall structure in my classroom from a couple of years ago, the kid who was climbing that, I let him do that because I knew him and I knew he could do it, and I was also watching how carefully he was doing that. He was being very careful and making sure that he actually didn't fall. That has been my experience. That when kids are allowed to control their own bodies, they're careful with them.
Well, have you found, because what I love watching is a child who will help another child climb up something or get higher than, they actually try to lift that child's body up so that they can get higher. And I've seen where children will actually put their hands together and cup them and help a child move forward in that process. And it really creates some almost mentorship in the process of taking risk. And it's a joy to watch that opportunity to take place. And I think I saw that in your program when I observed then that some of the children were actually demonstrating to other children how to do certain things. Do you think that occurs?
Certainly. I mean, we had a experience where the kids used a ladder to take over our storage closet in the back of our room, the back of our classroom, and threw all our toilet paper and paper towels and everything out of it. And this was a closet that was above my, you know, it was over 6 feet high. And it was not easy to get into it. You had to climb to the top of the ladder and then hoist yourself, get a leg up, you know, get up and in. And there was a lot of mentoring. I think that also speaks to the relationship between physical risk and social risk.
Talk a little bit about that. What do you mean the difference between physical and social risk?
Well, I mean, I think, like Amy was talking about, the connection to sort of taking a risk later, you know, with academic work, which I think is really important and true. I think also there's a connection to, I mean, opening yourself up to someone else can be risky. Putting your idea out there in a group and not knowing how it's going to be received, whether it's going to be shot down or accepted or ignored, can be risky. So having experience, both positive and negative, with physical risk, I think, can also help facilitate, I've seen it facilitate social relationships.
Yeah, Amy, because of your variety of age groups, you probably have noticed that also, where an older child might assist a younger child involved in some risk adventures. Have you noticed that?
Yes, it happens pretty regularly. And one of the things that I've noticed a lot lately is I have a little boy who is 14 months old, And he wants to climb up the big slide because he sees all of the older children climbing up the big slide. And the children have gotten really good at tying knots because we have some really long lengths of rope. And so they have tied a rope to the bar that is above the slide to try to assist this 14, almost 15-month-old child in being able to climb up the slide. So they're trying to have him hang on to the rope while they help push him as he tries to walk up. He hasn't made it more than, you know, maybe a quarter to a third of the way up the slide so far. But it's a daily thing where they're trying to help him get up the slide.
What a great thing to watch, I bet.
Oh, it is. It's so much fun. And he's just, this little guy is just all smiles. And to have the support of everybody else around him, he's just like, he's beaming.
You know, one of the reasons that I think people use frequently for not allowing children to take risk, even illusions of risk, is the whole safety factor they bring up. You know, that child could get hurt, I might get sued, and so they use that sometimes as a vehicle to not allow children to do things that they're capable of doing. How do we respond to that kind of question when people are either nervous about allowing children to do certain things or actually just use it as a vehicle for not having to change? How do we handle those kinds of questions?
Yeah, I think that those questions are really valid, and those concerns are very, I think, can come from a place that's very honest, and that can make them really hard. You know, like, it can be hard to just get over that fear. And I think that a way forward in that is through trusting relationships, if that makes sense. So, yes, mm-hmm. like making sure that things are safe, but also really having, you know, families know that you are making things safe, that trusting you enough, having that relationship with them, that they can trust you enough to leave their children in your care and know that you're going to keep them safe. And that's something that I feel like I'm being a little bit vague, but I feel like that's a really important thing that doesn't just happen. There's nothing that you can say that will just make that happen. But that's, I guess, a relationship that's built maybe over time and in lots of different ways.
Yeah, I think that's true. Go ahead, Amy.
I think another thing to remember is stuff happens. I mean, I think of a provider friend of mine who we were having a conversation about risk a couple of months ago, and she had taken the kids out, and they were out in the woods, and they were climbing, and they were jumping, and I mean, they were taking all of these wonderful risks and doing things, and they came back, and a little boy tripped over his own 2 feet in the kitchen and needed stitches. So, you know, things can happen, but again, you know, that relationship being built, and remembering that, you know, just because you see something where kids are, you know, 8 feet high, doesn't mean that if you haven't allowed children to climb that you put something 8 feet high out right away, that it's a progression. Yeah. And you allow them to take the smaller risks before delving into the higher or the bigger type of risks.
I think
there was important. Did I just say
because I think what some people do is they'll go to a workshop and they get an idea and think, oh my God, I love this idea, I'm going to go back and try it immediately, without really carefully looking and watching to see whether or not the children that they're working with are capable yet at that point, that there's some building up towards climbing 6 foot high. It could be just climbing 3 foot high at the beginning. So there's that process of practicing to take risks too. Don't you think so, Ben, in terms of that even for children, it's that evolution of people just doing something.
Absolutely. And I, for children and for adults, I mean, I was thinking when Courtney first, we were talking earlier about changing our environment, when Courtney first encouraged us to have mat areas in all of our classrooms, in each of our classrooms, I was working in the two-year-old class at the time, and we put a mat down, and I was wrestling in there with the kids, and it was fantastic. We were having lots of fun, and I just got clocked in my, right in my face. I got, I think, an elbow to my eye socket, and I thought, oh, this is fantastic. Here, here's me, advocate for roughhousing, coming out of our first day with a mat in the room with a potential black eye. It's gonna go a long way to convincing people this is a good idea. So yeah.
Yeah, I think there is that process of really carefully observing what children are capable of doing and then adding and expanding the opportunity, and what children are like at the beginning might be different by the middle.
Absolutely.
And that some children already have the skills at the beginning of the year, where others might need a little more practice in terms of that process. So as we think that we all agree that risk-taking is important for children, I think part of the challenge is that I'm always saying that children cannot be responsible for their safety. They just don't have the mental and cognitive and emotional capacity to say, I need to do this to make it safer. So it really ends up having to be the adults who create an environment where risk can take place. So what are some of the things that we need to help people know that they're going to need to do to allow safe, within limit guardrails, risk opportunities? What are some of the things that they need to do or that you have done to create those experiences? You had mentioned a mat, Ben?
Yeah, mats. I think mats, or if you can't get your hands on a mat, a mattress is also really good. And then jumping off furniture. I think that's a pretty important and fun activity, and everybody's got it.
What about the idea of ladders?
Yeah.
How do we, is there a way to make ladders? Amy, have you done any of this too? How do we make ladders? Because some people get really, oh, be careful, be careful, be careful, be careful, kind of tone. And how do we help ladders become safe, or are they automatically safe for children to go up?
I think that having ladders only the height that you want them to climb. So, you know, again, in the beginning, if you're only going to have a ladder that has two or three rungs for them to climb, that might be a good thing. And, you know, ladders can be moved. So making sure that when the ladder is out, that you're observing to make sure that it's on good footing. It's not put on top of something that's going to slide before the children climb on it. And again, it's, you know, you need to let the children kind of learn some of that on their own, but being there to help them when it looks like it's not going to be a safe situation is important. And, you know, I know we've talked about this a little bit before. I think I mentioned before, you know, my licensor was really concerned about the rope in our program at one point because she was concerned about the risk of, you know, it being too long, and if children were running with it, somebody was going to get clotheslined or, you know, something like that. And so it's just a matter of making sure that when children are engaged in some of the behaviors that might be a little bit riskier, or if there's a concern that someone might get hurt, that you have the staff being alert to what's going on and right there in order to be able to jump in if necessary, if things look like they're going in a direction where it might not be safe.
How about for you, Ben? Same thing in terms of...
Yeah, you know, it's Amy's, what you just said sparked something that hadn't really totally gelled with me before, but I think that a certain, I mean, to, just to be blunt about it, it requires an intense level of attention. You know, we're not setting up the pit of balls to dump the kids into so that we can talk about our weekends or what we watched on television last night, or, you know, our attention is focused on what the kids are doing pretty much 100% of the time, all the time. And I think that's part of what makes the environment safe.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether or not, you know, some adults might not have experienced in their own childhood opportunities for risk taking, so therefore they might not know what needs to be provided, and in some cases how exciting and challenging and yet rewarding that can be, because the opportunities that children have in terms of risk taking really does support their development. I thought, for example, I had a child 2 years ago that used to love climbing a 5-foot ladder, but when he first started climbing, he would climb up really fast, but then he would forget because he didn't have the same experience of coming down, which is a total different skill. And if the adult's not there, the likelihood is he might jump. And in some cases, he might be very capable of landing on his feet and being fine. In other cases, he might need some help in terms of putting one foot in front of the other or behind each other to get down, because they haven't had that kind of practice with ladders. So it's easier to go up than it is to come down in terms of that process. So sometimes just giving the opportunities to experience those things really creates some basic knowledge and some comfort, and they're real quick at picking it up in terms of that. Don't you find that children need opportunities to practice to become better at doing those kinds of things?
They do, and they need, I mean, when I am talking about attaching our attention to what they're doing, it's not to run over there and grab the kid off the top of the ladder because he doesn't know how to get down. You know, it's to be there to say, I'm right here.
Yep.
You know, I'm going to make sure you don't get hurt.
Right.
You know,
right.
We don't help. It's not a hard and fast rule, but I tend not to help a kid get anywhere or get down from anywhere. But I'm always there to make sure that they don't get hurt. And that can involve a lot of crying. It can involve a lot of upset, fear. But I think all of those things are important.
Oh, yes, yes. Let's talk about, because we're getting close to the closure, I want to talk about tools, because that comes up frequently about the fear of allowing children to use real tools when they're constructing or pounding and that. Amy and Ben, I know you both do that. What kinds of things do you allow children to use in terms of tools?
We use hot glue guns. That seems to be one that a lot of people have a really hard time with. And I've had children as young as 2 years old using a hot glue gun. We use hand saws. We use power drills. And before they use them as drills, we put a paintbrush in instead of the drill bit, so they get real comfortable and familiar with how to hold the drill and how to make it work. You know, we use hammers, we use screwdrivers, lots and lots of different tools. I have hand drills in addition to the power drills as well for the children.
Yeah, how about you, Ben?
Yeah, we have used tools off and on over the last couple of years, similar tools. You know, there's something pretty satisfying about hammering a nail into a piece of wood, you know, with a real hammer and a real nail. You know, a handsaw is, especially with the 4 and 5 year olds, sawing a piece of wood is not easy. And, you know, seeing a kid committed to the project of sawing through a piece of wood is, is a pretty it's pretty great. It's a pretty great experience, but it does require a lot of close supervision.
And do you require that the wood, because I want to, because some people get really antsy about saws, that the wood remains in a vise when they're sawing? Is that?
I tend to put it in a vise because that allows the kid to keep two hands on the saw and reduces the chances of them sawing one of their fingers off significantly.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is it creates more opportunity for success, too. Because if you're trying to hold a piece of wood and saw it at the same time, it's, you know, you're more likely to fail at it than you are to be successful. I noticed, Ben, at your school, too, and Amy, you might do this, too, that essentially that even the three-year-olds were using drills to put screws into boards and things of that sort. Which to me is a really great opportunity for children, and it's also, it doesn't seem like to be that risky, but it can be, right?
Yes. Yeah. And then we get into the question of the tool, the use of the tool. What if they want to use the screwdriver to poke holes in something instead of screw? You know, are the tools to be used for just this one purpose, or, you know, that opens up a whole other realm of choices that we have as adults.
And people sometimes will say, I don't want to really use real tools because what if they start them at different spots of the program? And I'm thinking, okay, why isn't the adult? That's the adult's role, is to decide in most cases where would the safest place for this activity to take place, because children cannot make that decision. So are we going to allow children to walk around the classroom with a hammer? Probably not in terms of the process. But a child can't make that decision. That's going to have to be. But again, it's a simple statement. Are you finished with the hammer? If not, it belongs over here in terms of that process. Don't you think that that's the easiest guide for the, rather than not doing it at all, let's look at developing some guardrails that make it more accessible for children.
Yes. Well,
and I think that, again, a lot of times people don't give children enough credit, because a lot of the times when you allow children to use real tools, you don't even have to, I mean, yes, you need to put the guardrails, it needs to stay here, but you know, 9 times out of 10, the children are just in awe of the fact that you're letting them use real tools that they want to do something real with, that they are going to be more careful than you would ever imagine them to be. You know, I talked about the fact that we use the hot glue guns. Well, I have never had a child burn their fingers. I cannot tell you how many adults have burnt their fingers at my workshops where I bring in the hot glue guns. You know, and so they just have a different, you know, they're going in, and as Ben had mentioned with other things, they want to keep their body safe just as much as we want them to keep their body safe. So they're going to be careful when they're doing things using real tools.
Yeah, the hot glue guns, I think, are great, because even, you know, tools like a saw or a screwdriver or a hammer, they're valuable. They can be valuable. I mean, I think, again, it comes down to knowing your kids and deciding, as you know, this is another decision that we make as adults. Is this something these kids are actually interested in or not? Those tools can also be frustrating, because there are kids who want to actually make something. And, you know, a four-year-old is not really going to make anything with a hammer and nails. But they can really make something pretty awesome with the hot glue gun. So I want to second that as a component of the real tool set.
Let's end with this. Is it ever too risky? Is there an experience that might be too risky for children? At what point do we draw the line, per se, because that comes up frequently with adults? Or isn't there a line?
Oh, sure. There surely is. I mean, I think one thing for me is I really like this this quote that goes around, that maybe you all have seen it, of this, like, the difference between a risk and a hazard. Have you seen that? Do you know that?
Go ahead.
The hazard is, you know, a risk is something that a danger that a child sees and decides whether to engage it or not. A hazard is a danger that a child does not see.
Good definition. Yeah.
And our job is to keep the spaces to the extent that we can free of hazards, free of dangers that we're not aware of and that the kids aren't aware of. But that's different from risk. And the line of whether something is too risky or not comes down to the individual child's sense of their own ability and capacities and our comfort level. You know, so I'm sure that line exists, and it's probably different from everybody.
I would have to agree that there is a line, but that line is going to change with every set of children that you have and in each situation and how much staff you have available. And, you know, there are so many different factors that come into play to determine where something is too risky. But one of the things that, you know, we continue to strive to do here is continue to look at our practices and look at what the children are showing us or telling us that they need, and finding more and more ways to support their needs of that illusion of the risk-taking for them.
We are at the end of our program on risk-taking. I think we all agree that if we step back, take a deep breath, we will recognize and observe carefully what children are capable of doing. Once we observe what they're capable of doing, I think the risk-taking becomes a little more comfortable, becomes a little more readable, and we all encourage you to allow children to take risks. Thanks so much for letting us shake some bones. If you have questions or want continued discussion about this subject, you can email me at dkj5075@aol.com or Amy at...
You can email me at amyahola@hotmail.com, or you can find me on Facebook at Child Central Station.
And how about Ben, if they want to find more about your school or what your concept of risk taking is?
Sure. My email is bendalbey@yahoo.com.
Thanks so much, Ben, for being with us, and thanks everybody for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
This has been Shaking Bones. Dan and Amy will be back next week for more Bone Rattling. Stay tuned.
Hey, you want to support all the Upstairs Studio podcasts? It's as simple as this. Use our Amazon link when you shop Amazon. We get a small percentage of what you spend. You don't pay any extra. You get your stuff from Amazon. Everybody wins. Where do you find the link? Well, it's on the Explorations Early Learning app. You can find it on the Explorations Early Learning website. And if you don't find it in those places, just get a hold of Jeff on Facebook or via email, and he'll hand deliver it to your inbox. Thanks for your support. Bye-bye.